Welcome to the Album Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Andy, Don, and Dude.
Let's get ready to record rumble.
We're rumbling again. So this is the Album Nerds Podcast. I'm Dude. I got Don with me. Unfortunately, Andy continues to be away. He's on his way to space. He stole all of the Album Nerds Podcast funding and has used it to buy a ticket on Blue Origin. Congratulations to him.
Wow.
His life will forever be changed.
I think I'm going to get spacey.
Don, how you doing, my man? You ready for some record rumbles?
Yes, just show me the way.
So clever. As I stated, this is the Album Nerds Podcast. We love albums, the album format, finding any reason to talk about them, so much so that we've created this fantasy world where they're in a boxing match together. We have a great show for you today. We're back with another slugfest on our Record Rumble series where two albums enter the ring and go head-to-head, track-to-track, and toe-to-toe. As always, Don's going to ask us a deep question. We'll have some shout-outs to some other albums or album-related items we're digging, and then we'll spin the legendary Wheel of Albumgeddon to learn the topic of our next Record Rumble. But for now,
let's get it on!
Few experiences match the raw energy and communal thrill of a live performance. This week, we pit two titans of concert recordings against each other in a clash that celebrates musicianship and the power of bands feeding off the roar of the crowd. These iconic releases have each become cultural touchstones, transforming their creators from rising stars into household names and forever changing the way fans experience music beyond the studio. We'll figure out which live album best captures the electricity, spontaneity, and magic that only a legendary night on the stage can deliver.
So many choices here. Some just stick out above the rest, particularly from certain eras.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's time to present our fighters.
Choose your fighter!
In this corner, weighing in with over 11 million records sold, here's the album that redefined live rock for a generation. Known for its soaring guitar work, unforgettable melodies, and making a guitar talk, this album captured the energy of a legendary night and turned it into a cultural phenomenon. Please welcome the classic that brought stadium-sized sound into living rooms everywhere, Frampton Comes Alive!
Wow, you've really stepped that up. Yeah. The presentation is much more like mine.
Yeah, I'm really into this one. Frampton Comes Alive is, of course, a live album by British musician Peter Frampton, born Peter Kenneth Frampton in Beckenham, Kent, England, in 1950. He began his career in bands like The Herd and Humble Pie before launching his solo career. Had a handful of albums, none of them with huge commercial success. This was recorded on tour in 1975, places like San Francisco, San Rafael, Long Island, and Plattsburgh, New York. It was released in January 1976. Features Bob Mayo on rhythm guitar, piano, electric piano, and organ. Stanley Sheldon on bass, and John Stamos on drums.
I thought it said John Stamos, and I was like, "There's no way he would have been too young." But that would have been way cooler. No offense to Stamos there.
Have mercy.
Yeah, so this is for many years this stood as the greatest selling live album of all time, surpassed since by Clapton. Unplugged.
All the Unplugs. Yeah, maybe some Unplugged albums head-to-head would be fun in the future. All right, my turn.
Choose your fighter!
And in this corner, firing straight out of New York City, strapped in leather, spitting fire, and soaked in sweat. This is the live album that saved a band and built a rock and roll empire. Selling over 5 million copies, it turned smoke, blood, and face paint into history. Four icons, one stage. No apologies. You wanted the best. You got the best from the hottest band in the world. It's Kiss Alive from 1975.
All right. So Kiss, they're the guys with the kooky paint on their faces. Formed in New York City in January of 1973. Paul Stanley, Gene Simmons, previously of Wicked Lester. That was their band before.
Oh.
And they added Ace Frehley on guitar and Peter Criss on drums, completing the lineup. They immediately focused on visual spectacle. Outrageous personas, kabuki makeup, explosions, fire-breathing, levitating drums, and costumes. Each member had a distinct identity. The demon was Simmons. The star child was Paul Stanley. The spaceman, Ace Frehley, and the catman, Peter Criss. So Kiss signed with Casablanca Records and released their self-titled debut in 1974. Did well, you know, built a nice live following, but their albums just did not sell well. So by their third album, released in 1975, the record label was struggling financially and Kiss was in debt. And they decided to record a live album to capture their true stage energy, hoping that would be the breakthrough, because they just couldn't really get on the radio. Alive was released in September of 1975, produced by Eddie Kramer. It was recorded during their 1975 tour with most usable material from Cobo Hall in Detroit, and that's a Kiss stronghold, and other recordings from Cleveland, Wildwood, New Jersey, and Davenport, Iowa. Eddie Kramer, known for working with Jimi Hendrix, Led Zeppelin, did the post-production overdubs, which we'll have to get into a little bit as we discuss these. And it was Kiss's breakthrough album, resurrected the record label, and kind of it marked the beginning of Kiss Mania, Kiss Army, and everything we know about the band today. And they just finished their farewell tour. I think that's enough background on our fighters.
Let's do it.
Indeed.
And here we go!
Okay, so Frampton Comes Alive begins, there's a little introduction, and then there's the song Something's Happening.
I'm glad he told me something's happening, because the song itself doesn't necessarily communicate that.
So the studio version of this song was titled Baby, Something's Happening, and it appeared on Frampton's third solo album called Something's Happening from 1974. It's true of all of the songs on the album. This live version has much more energy than the recorded version, but it shows off Frampton's smooth and clear guitar playing. The solos are, you know, bright and easy to follow. Definitely, you know, highlights his skill set, which is one of the reasons I think he got bored with Humble Pie, was because they were going towards a louder sound. Right. I don't know. He spent all these years learning to be a technically good guitarist, and it wasn't, you know, really being demonstrated with Humble Pie. But yeah, you know, a nice, solid, catchy tune to start off the record.
Yeah, it's smooth and groovy. It just doesn't bring a lot of aggressive urgency if something's happening, you know? Like, hey, you're in for a treat, something special's happening tonight. And I get it was a previously existing song, but it's more like a warm-up stretch before the fight than actually taking any swings. There's something laid back and beachy about this, like a British Jimmy Buffett vibe. I mean, the beach would be cold because we're talking Britain here.
Yeah, it's a good point. There is kind of an adult contemporary vibe to this album and his sound. And actually, his studio albums have that vibe, and I wasn't really aware of that.
Maybe like a modern-day James Taylor, or modern-day for then, you know?
Yeah. All right, well, how does Kiss begin Alive?
Well, they're just going to drop a big old deuce. Deuce, original title was Who Does Number Two Work For? was originally on the self-titled album Kiss from 1974. It's just so stupid to me. They had three albums between 74 and 75, and then their fourth album in 75. I wish the record industry worked like that still.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
But Deuce is more like is he worth a shit? You know, is kind of the vibe. They just couldn't say that. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a working man earning his keep kind of a thing. You know, I'm doing the hard work, lady. You better do yours. It opens Alive with a explosive energy, crowd roars, and it's not souped up at all, Don. It's not. The crowd wasn't made louder. Yes, it was. Which does add to the album and to the explosive feel, but it does show off their raw chemistry. Written by Gene Simmons, early concert favorite. The riff was reportedly inspired by the Rolling Stones' Bitch, and it's often cited by fans as one of the greatest Kiss songs, and the Alive version is widely considered the best. And I think that's a weird part about both of these albums as we go through. Talented bands, you know, obviously Kiss had more of a gimmick going. Their records just weren't exciting, and they made these songs sound so much better in the live format, which I think makes for a larger, interesting discussion in the future about why don't more bands just record live?
Yeah.
Their whole albums. What'd you think about The Deucer?
It definitely sets the tone for the album. I mean, this album is all about kind of raw energy in this, you know, so this is the beginning of that. There's some interesting guitar work in there. I think I'm becoming an Ace Frehley fan.
Yeah, he's probably wasn't classically trained, but he just makes sounds that work.
Yeah. Yeah, it reminds me of, what's his name? Johnny Thunders from the New York Dolls, you know, yeah. similar vibe. And then, you know, Peter Criss's, you know, drumming is also good. I read, I think that really his drumming is mostly untouched, unlike everything else on the album.
Yeah. And it's kind of, there's sort of a jazziness to it, which is weird, but it does work.
Good start.
I think both of our albums came out swinging, just one hit a little harder than the other one. During any sporting event, you got to take some breaks. You got to hear from your sponsors. So why don't we take a couple seconds to hear from our friend over at the Pick a Disc podcast.
Do you like music? Do you like podcasts? Chances are you like music podcasts. Take this one, for example, Pick a Disc, where every fortnight a guest comes on to talk about an album for whatever reason they want to. Sometimes I like it, sometimes perhaps even something else other than just like it. You just listen to the podcast and find out. We talk about the album, we talk about the songs, we talk about the artists, we talk about tangent things that are slightly related, and sometimes we deviate off tangents. But don't worry, we'll always bring it back in the end. But you can find us on all your social medias and all the podcast apps for searching for Pick a Disc. You can also find us on the part of the Weedy Podcast Network under Linktree/WeDigPodcasts. And until then, happy listening to all those discs that you are picking. Goodbye.
There are definitely worse things to be picking than discs. So go check it out.
Haymaker!
In this round, we will select standout cuts from our own albums and try and take a big swing at our competition. What you got, Donald?
All right. So, you know, one of the most known cuts from this album is Show Me the Way.
Show me the way. Every day I want you.
Yeah, it's 70s soft rock with a little bit of a classic rock edge.
There's a bounce to it. You know, there's like, we were both kind of bopping.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, he could have called this band Light Purple.
So Show Me the Way originally appeared on Frampton's fourth studio album called Frampton from 1975. In fact, it was that album that was that they were touring for. It features the iconic use of the talk box.
Mm, love the talk box.
Yeah, I do too. So that's the guitar effect that, you know, you put in a tube up to like your mouth. You're basically playing the guitar through a tube and it goes into your mouth and then into the regular microphone.
So my question is, who the hell figured that out and why?
I forgot who showed. I was reading who showed him it. It was like Ronnie Wood or somebody.
I know Joe Walsh used it.
Maybe it was Joe Walsh that showed him. Yeah, but there's like really two songs that feature that, and we'll get to the other one in a minute. But this was, you know, I think one of the standout cuts on the album.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you've got this, and then you've got, you know, like Baby, I Love Your Way, which doesn't have talk box, but is also a more iconic sort of romantic turn down the lights kind of vibe to it.
Yeah, there's lots of showing the way and loving your way on this. Mm-hmm.
Lots of ways every day.
And this is one where they did have to re-record some of the rhythm guitar, not like the big talk box guitar, but so there were minimal overdubs on this album, probably not to the extent of the Kiss record, which we'll probably talk about.
I mean, this is definitely a strong song, and I listened to the original version too, and again, this has more emotion behind it, so definitely well executed, and the crowd loves it.
Yes, they do. All right. I feel a big punch coming.
Well, you're about to get annihilated. This one's called Strutter. So Strutter was on the Kiss debut album from 1974. In the live version, the tempo's kicked up, giving it a glam rock swagger, a little more bite. Ace Frehley's solo is looser and more aggressive. We got caught a little bit of that, one of the solos there, built on a Chuck Berry-inspired riff, which you can definitely hear.
Yeah.
Walking bass and tight drumming. The chorus has that the staccato stops and the layered vocal harmonies. You know, they were inspired to some degree by the Beatles. They talk about that, but they always recognize, they say, we're not the Beatles in any, but we, you know, they had an inspiration. But yeah, you got Paul Stanley's sass and swagger, but it's a song about a confident woman who kind of set, she yeah. says when you can talk to her.
She acts like it's understood.
Yeah.
Is that what they say?
Yeah. And the lady knows it's understood.
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
But yeah, she struts around and says, you come to me, dude. And that kind of, there's a, this highlights one of the differences between Peter Frampton and Kiss, just in the general song inspirations. Kiss is rock and roll, getting laid, yeah. partying. It's more in that, not metal, but more in that hard rock.
Yeah. Glam, a little bit of glam too.
Yeah. Some of their songs don't sound so hard rock. They just sound like standard rock and roll, but with the personas and the makeup and the explosions, it's supposed to be dangerous sounding and sexy. And yes. I don't think Peter Frampton's trying to sound sexy, but if you look at the album cover.
Oh, yeah.
That's all you need. Handsome man.
Yes, he is. Yeah, I like these tracks that that Stanley sings.
You know, yeah. He's more of a MC of the party or a ringmaster of the circus.
How we doing here?
Yeah. Do it.
But yeah, this track, you definitely hear more of the bluesy influence than the, you know, than the other songs. Yeah, definitely a standout cut. No doubt about it.
All right. Well, we took our best shots. Let's move on to round three.
Copy, Mick.
Do it.
All right, so round three, opponent cuts. So in this round, we each try to land a critical blow by spotlighting one of the weaker tracks from our opponent's albums.
It's always risky.
Yeah.
That's a tough decision to make. It also feels mean.
Yes.
And sometimes it just blows up in our faces.
All right, so what's the weakness in Frampton Comes Alive?
I'm going with the Stones cover that he did on here, Jumpin' Jack Flash.
Jumpin' Jack Flash, it's a gas. Jumpin' Jack Flash, it's a gas.
You know, never go full Stones, and he did not. Frampton first recorded this track for his 1972 debut album, Wind of Change, and he infused it with a bluesy hard rock edge and set it apart from the original, which is fine. This did gain further prominence through his live performances, and it's got raw energy, and I appreciate his willingness to take a classic to other places, but it doesn't bring any of the grit or swagger of the Stones' original, and without that, it feels sanitized and too polished. The more like it's from Glee or something, not a rock show. I think what he should have done is just write a different song using this basis, because this sounds like a great Frampton song, but when you hear Jumpin' Jack Flash, he's a gas, it's just kind of
flesh.
He could have called it, you know, Leaping Frank Johnson or something, and made his own song.
Leaping Lanny Poppo. Yeah, so one critic described it as a polite rendition of Jumpin' Jack Flash. So, yeah, I mean, it's probably my least favorite part of the album. And unfortunately, it does go on for almost 8 minutes. But it's, I mean, if you were at the show, I think it would be typical and, you know, it would be fine. And
right. You might even be impressed by it. Be like, whoa, he really did something crazy with it. It's just hearing it on the record doesn't work for me.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, Don, take your best shot.
Yeah, well, I think I might be letting you win this round, and I only picked this song because I know it's not your favorite. So I chose kind of the, you know, one of the most iconic rock songs of all time. Here's Rock and Roll All Night. So Rock and Roll All Night originally appears on the album Dressed to Kill from 1975. This version is about a full minute longer than the original studio recording. I guess this is one of the ones that they had to overdub a lot. They had to fix, I guess there's just some sloppy playing going on. I can't imagine because it already seems like a little sloppy and dumpy, yeah. Some of these recordings, so I can't imagine how bad it actually was originally.
Yeah, their shows were about the explosions and sure. the fire and the energy and the leaping around, so I imagine that the parts, like, the whole sounds great probably when you were at a Kiss show back then,
yeah.
But the parts, maybe not so much.
Right. But this, I mean, this is, you know, an iconic yeah. song, you know, like when I picture a crowd, you know, putting their fists in the air, you know, they're singing, I want to rock and roll all night.
But yeah.
It's, yeah, it's a good riff. It's a, you know, nice, simple song. I don't know why I'm supposed to be saying that it's a bad song,
yeah,
but
yes.
I'm like trying to convince you that it's a good song. So what's your issue with the song?
Just the lyrics are dumb. I mean, I loved it as a little kid, and I was not old enough to really be a big Kiss fan. It was more like by early 80s, I was, before they took the makeup off, I was like scared and fascinated by them. My babysitters would bring Kiss records to my house, that kind of thing. So I was aware of them and I thought they were cool, but I didn't really know too much about them. And I thought that song was awesome. It's just, it's so overplayed and I'm just kind of tired of it. But this version is the definitive one. It's certainly better than the one on Dress to Kill, which, by the way, that album cover is hilarious. The four of them wearing suits. Ill-fitting suits. They wore their manager's suits because they didn't have any money for anything for the album cover. They were broke by that point. Yeah, I mean, and it's about rock star hedonism and the freedom of the night and all that. And the song made them superstars. That's the version you hear on the radio. So even though I just kind of think that some of the baby, that's quite a lot, is kind of
dumb,
you know, but it is what it is. It wasn't yeah. written now. It was written in the 70s and it was a different world. So I just have to learn to accept that. But I'm not sure you did enough damage. Well, that's three rounds down. Why don't we switch gears for a few minutes before we get back to the fight and answer a question.
Excuse me, I'd like to ask you a few questions.
And it's time again for Deep Questions by Don. So the theme for today, of course, is live music. Are you drawn more to the visual spectacle or the musical substance when experiencing live music? I think I know your answer.
Yeah, I mean, if there aren't 15 people in stupid costumes and headset mics with lip syncing and millions of dance moves, I want nothing to do with it. No, I mean, I don't like musicals. I don't like stage productions. I want people standing there with guitars, bass, drums, maybe some nice rugs on the stage. And I like some jumping. I like, you know, I like action, you know, but I don't want dance routines and choreographed stuff, and I don't even really want explosions and things yeah. like Kiss did. I've never seen Kiss live. I think it might be an assault on my senses, but yeah, I just like it simple. I want to see I want to hear the singer sing, and I want to see the band members play their parts, and I want to see how it all fits together, and that's what I enjoy, is especially the closer they sound to their record, the better, which means the record should be simply produced as well, you know.
Yeah.
What about you?
Well, I mean the music is most important to me. You know, I mean, if it sounds like shit, then, you know, I'm not going to enjoy it. But I mean, I do like some of the pageantry, you know, being a Pink Floyd fan. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I've seen Roger Waters, and I mean, he's got the giant inflatable pig and stuff. I mean, that stuff is exciting. I don't know why I like it. And I've seen other artists that have little like dance routines and stuff. And if there's a point to it, you know, I think it's good. I don't think it's necessary. I don't know. And some bands are just kind of like The Cure, don't move around a lot on stage. Right, yeah. They usually have some sort of simple backdrop that's kind of colorful, and they've got some fog. And
like, that's changed too. Like now they have videos playing in the background and stuff. It's changed a lot. I haven't been to a lot of big shows lately, but I know that the stage, even a band that just stands there, they have cool
yeah.
shit going on a screen behind them.
One thing I don't like is, you know, when artists use videos, then that means they have to play to a click track, so it's
right.
In sync. And so that means you have no variance from night to night as far as tempo right. goes and stuff, so you're losing some of that live vibe.
Good point.
Yeah. All right. What do you look for when you see a live performance? Let us know on Instagram and Facebook, or leave a comment on our website, albumnerds.com.
Let's get back to the ring for round four.
Finish them!
All right, so round four, we are covering the closing cuts, the final songs on the album. Any great album should wrap things up in a way that feels satisfying and leaves the listener thinking about the music long after it ends. So what you got, Don?
Well, been kind of saving it for the end. This, we're looking for the last round knockout. This is Do You Feel Like We Do. Yeah, that's the stuff right there.
Yeah. It's just scatting into the tube, yeah. Essentially. Yeah, but it sounds cool. Yeah. Cool as hell.
So Do You Feel Like We Do was originally released on Frampton's Camel from 1973. I don't know. Interesting album title.
Did you listen to that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't really resemble this experience at all.
I mean, it's got the talk box, but it's not dynamic like this.
Yeah. So this runs about 14 minutes, but this is really the showcase of the talk box. I mean, there's about 3 or 4 minutes of this stuff, and it's just a lot of fun. But when it gets back into the rocking part, you know, it's great. It's definitely my favorite song on the album, probably my favorite Frampton song ever.
And yeah.
I mean, growing up, you know, this wasn't my kind of music. And so when I finally started listening to like classic rock radio, I remember hearing this one day, I actually thought it was Another Brick in the Wall for a second. It's got that doon, doon, doon. But yeah, I heard this. I'm like, oh my God, the guy's guitar is talking. Like, how did he do that? But there's more to it than just the novelty of the talk box, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, how do you feel about this record?
I feel like you do.
Okay.
Frampton pulls out all the stops on this 14-minute song. It's the best 14 minutes on the record. The talk box, the jam session, the crowd interaction, it captures the whole vibe, I think, that the whole record was looking to capture. He's not the only talk boxer in the world, but he certainly helped bring it to the forefront. Bon Jovi thanks you, and so do I. Yeah, this is a great way to close this record out, because it definitely makes you think, hey, did I miss some cool moments before? I need to go back. So, very nice.
Yeah. Well, how does Kiss finish things off?
Not as spectacularly. Let's check out a little bit of Let Me Go Rock and Roll.
Kiss loves you!
Not everything got touched up, but that's good. That sounded natural and like really the end of a show, which I appreciate about the way they close this out. But just, I don't find the song particularly interesting. It was originally on Hotter Than Hell from 1974. And that extended jam outro and the faster tempo is kind of what makes this better, I think, than the original recording. But it's really a 1950s rock and roll energy with call and response vocals and blues shuffle foundation. One of their oldest songs in their repertoire, another one about escaping responsibility and surrendering to the rock and roll lifestyle. Yeah, not bad, but would have liked to end with explosions, and this has more of a Deep Purple feel rather than a Kiss feel, which is cool, but not hot.
Yeah, this is another one that kind of where the blues shows more.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I guess I hadn't really identified Kiss as being sort of a bluesier band, but they definitely have their moments.
One thing I think they've missed out on this fourth album and the three before, and even records afterwards, like Destroyer, which came out after this and was their biggest studio album, I think. They don't capitalize on the personas, the demon and the space ace and all that stuff. I feel like they should have songs about that.
Oh, yeah.
And they really, throughout their entire discography, don't. They never address that. And I just think it's weird. That would have been, you know, they made four solo albums. They should have done it from the perspective of their characters, and they didn't. They just made whatever they wanted.
Yeah, did they ever really do, like, the progressive thing at all?
Yeah, kind of. They did an album called The Elder. Oh. Songs from The Elder, which was a soundtrack to a movie that never got made, concept album. But I think we know who had that round. But we've got one fifth and final round that we have to go through.
Go for it.
X Factor KO.
In this final round, we look at some key metrics that we think help make up great albums. We've got the digging factor. Is it an enjoyable listening experience? The killer to filler ratio. Are all the songs strong or how many are weak? The production. Which production lands the hardest hits, delivers the true heavyweight listening experience? A rematch. Do you want to listen to this album again and again and again? And the legacy, of course. Does it continue to influence music? Did it make a big impact on culture or society in any way? So we take all these five factors and then make one decision for this fifth round on who the winner is. Don, what you bringing to the table? What do you got for your X factors?
I mean, overall, I just think, I mean, Frampton Comes Alive is actually a great album. You know, I mean, the musicianship is great. I mean, the songwriting isn't amazing, but it's good. So, I mean, it just stands as, I guess, a piece of musical art. Alive is more about just capturing a moment in time, I think, or capturing an energy. I think both accomplish their goals, but I mean, I'm partial to Frampton Comes Alive. You know, I just think it's a great album. Killer to Filler Ratio, I'll just call it a draw. I think they're both consistent. There aren't really duds on either album, and you know that they maintain momentum throughout the production. So Frampton actually, I think it's self-produced, but it was engineered by Chris Mimsey, and I imagine for a live album, engineering is probably a pretty hard job.
Yeah,
the Frampton is just a bit cleaner. I'm sure the live performance was much cleaner too. You know, so
well, yeah.
I imagine the Kiss album probably sounds like the show sounded. So I think they did a fine job of recreating it. And then it sounds like they probably put a lot of work into, you know, fixing up the Kiss record more.
They did some vocal overdubs where stuff got missed. They fixed some guitar parts here and there. They took the crowd noise and elevated it because they didn't have the crowd mic'd, you know, so.
Right. But that helps add the energy.
Yes, I think. Right.
Overall, though, I think the Frampton songs can pass for studio recordings almost, a lot of them. So I'll give Frampton the nod on that. As far as rematch goes, I like the Kiss record. And I mean, I think it's a lot of fun. And there are times when I'm in the mood for it. But I'm probably more likely to listen to the Frampton record. And then Legacies, I mean, they're both huge. I mean, for Frampton, it's his best-selling album ever. I mean, he never really matched, you know, anything close to this kind of commercial success. Kiss, you know, went on and sold a lot of records, and their legacy lives on. I'll give that a draw as well. So I think Frampton's coming out on top in this round for me. How about you?
Kiss Alive feels like you're in the crowd. It's the album that makes you want to turn up the volume and join the Kiss army. I really feel like they draw their audience in here. Frampton is smoother, jam heavy, more relaxed, great for a chill vibe, but not as pulse pounding. But that's not really what he's shooting for, I don't think. I give the edge to Kiss. As far as songs go, there's a couple dated or repetitive cuts on the Kiss album, but the killers are like Deuce and Strutter, Cold Gin, Black Diamond, She, Parasite, 100,000 Years. There's only one real clunker for me is Got to Choose. I never really liked that song, but Frampa is consistently pleasant. That's what I call Peter Frampton. But a few moments like that Stones cover just totally pulled me out. But of course, Show Me the Way. Do You Feel Like We Do? Something's Happening, Baby, I Love Your Way. And then that Doobie Doo, Shooby Wah, the second song, whatever it's called. I despite the stupid title name, I really dig that track.
It actually sounds like the Doobie Brothers Listen to the Music. Is that intentional?
I couldn't figure that out. But Penny for Your Thoughts is nice, but not really essential. Lines on My Face I could do without too. But I think I lean Kiss. Production-wise, I feel like the Frampton record sounds more natural. There are moments on the Kiss that just sound kind of canned with the extra loud crowd noise, a little too consistent crowd noise. And both of them I want to listen to more. The Frampton one, I think I will listen to more than I have in the past, but Kiss is just part of what I do. For Legacy, Frampton, one of the best-selling live albums ever, made the talk box famous. And Kiss saved the band's career. Alive saved their career, saved their record label, defined what live rock album sound like after that. They take credit for Live at Budokan and other things that came afterwards. That one, I'm giving that a draw. Mm-hmm. I think they changed the game in different ways. So that was my round five.
Yeah, it's been a great battle, but now it's decision time. Both albums offer something special. One delivers high-energy rock, the other smooth, crowd-pleasing jams with talk-box flair. But which one truly stands out?
Let's send it back to the center of the ring and hear tonight's results.
All right, so round one for the opening track, I'm giving it to Kiss. I think Deuce comes out strong while Frampton's opener is smoother but less energetic. Round two, the Haymaker. It's going to be Kiss again. Ooh. I'm sorry, Don. Strutter just hits harder to me than Show Me the Way, although Show Me the Way is a nice love song and has some cool moments. I just think that Strutter helps propel the album forward. Round three, the Body Blows. Again, Kiss gets this one for me. Rock and Roll All Night is a classic. It backfired, Don, although I do find it hokey at times. There are other days when it's on when I'm totally into it. That closing track, round four, this one goes to Peter Frampton, no question. Standout closer, unlike Kiss's Let Me Go Rock and Roll. Yeah, gotta go with Do You Feel Like We Do. 100%. The X Factors. This one actually came out a draw for me. Both albums have killer tracks and solid legacies, but neither can completely outshine the other in all factors just because they're really trying for different things here. I think Frampton Comes Alive was an accident and Kiss Alive was an intentional, please God, this is our last shot. Kiss gets three rounds. Frampton gets one round. So for me, the winner is Kiss Alive. What do you have, Don?
Well, round one, I can't believe it, but I gave it to Kiss. Yeah, I mean, you're right. The Deuce really, you know, comes out strong. Round two for the Haymaker, I went with "Show Me the Way" by Peter Frampton. I just think that's a great cut, you know, better than anything Kiss did on their album. Round three, I mean, that was a gimme. "Rock and Roll All Night" is just it's a rock anthem, so that's that one goes to Kiss. Round four, the closing track. Yeah, I mean, Do You Feel Like We Do is, it's great. Great way to end an album. And then round five, you know, in almost every way, I think Frampton Comes Alive is just, you know, a superior album. It's better music. Everything about it is better. It sounds better. But, you know, Kiss deserves a lot of credit, I think, for recreating the live experience and for just, you know, providing energy and sort of advancing sort of the rock and roll ethos, you know, which carries on. But yeah, overall, my scorecard is 4-1 in favor of Frampton Comes Alive.
How did we do in our listener polls? Our third judge is you people out there. Keep an eye out on the socials for votes each week before we record. What did the album nerds have to say about this one, Don?
Well, it was very, very close. And so it was 53-47% with the winner being Kiss.
Yeah.
I can't believe it.
We have a new champion of the world.
Ah, yes. The Painted Legends take the crown with their powerhouse performance and unmatched energy. Kiss proves once again that they're the kings of the nighttime world stage. King of the Nighttime World is a song from Destroyer, the record after this.
Gotcha.
So congratulations to Kiss Alive for taking this record rumble.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Well, we spent all week, you know, in the hot and sweaty crowd at a live performance. Did you have a chance to dig anything else this week?
I've got a little something stowed away in my Kiss fanny pack. So let's start it off with something new I came across. It's not new. This band's been around since 1996. It's McCluskey with their first full-length album in 20 years. It's called The World Is Still Here and So Are We. They're a Welsh noise rock band known for their sharp wit, aggressive sound. After three acclaimed albums in the early 2000s and this long break, here they're back. Let's listen to a little bit of Unpopular Parts of a Pig.
Delicate seeds come from delicate flowers. That was the horse shit she fed me for hours.
I'll slash my nails, I got it by me.
Wow.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, so this delivers raw riffs, biting humor, relentless energy. standouts like Unpopular Parts of a Pig and Way of the Exploding Dickhead prove that McCluskey hasn't lost their edge. It's loud and snarky, and it's on Mike Patton's Ipecac label, which makes sense if you're a Faith No More fan.
Wow.
So in the spirit of the Kiss mania that I've been experiencing the last week, I dug out a CD of mine that I picked up in 1994. It's by various artists. It's called Kiss My Ass, classic Kiss regrooved. It was a bunch of popular bands at the time doing Kiss covers, and it was handpicked by the Kiss members of Kiss. This wasn't one of those like cheapo tribute albums. This was culled by Kiss.
Cool.
Why don't we kick it off with what I thought at the time was super weird. It's Garth Brooks with his version of Hard Luck Woman. You'll be a hard luck woman. So the album blends styles from country to metal, standout tracks by Garth Brooks, of course.
I hope he wore the cat makeup when he sang this.
Yeah, because Peter Criss had that raspy voice on the original. The Rock and Roll All Night by Toadette Sprocket, the sort of stripped down acoustic version, love that. Lenny Kravitz is on the record, Anthrax is on it. So yeah, it's a diverse, energized salute to Kiss's lasting impact. You ever listen to this one, Don?
I've heard some of the songs. I don't think I ever listened to the whole album through, but I definitely heard the Toad one.
And yeah. I don't know if it's still in print or anything, but I still have my CD from forever ago. So what have you been digging on, Donnie?
Well, suddenly I'm on like this indie folk kick. Thanks to actually the college radio station, some of these songs have been popping up. So The Head and the Heart. They've been around for quite a while, for about 15 years. They're from Seattle, Washington. Josiah Johnson and Jonathan Russell. Their latest album is called Aperture. And here's a song called After the Setting Sun.
You know, one thing that has always amazed me about this band is their name just describes their music really well.
Yeah, supposedly this album is, you know, themes of hope, resilience, and creative renewal. And then another one I just discovered, the artist is called Clover County, but it's actually the stage name for an A.G. Shiano. She's a singer-songwriter from Florida. She began writing songs at age 13. Not sure how old she is now. Maybe she sounds quite young still. She hasn't come out with a full album yet. She had a debut EP called Porch Lights, which came out in November. And then there's a new single, Nothing at All and Good These Days. Here's Good These Days.
Kind of I'm feeling a little Casey Musgraves there.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I'm enjoying all this kind of melancholy, quiet stuff. Nice contrast to the
all these fights we've been having.
So what are you digging? Let us know. Join us on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Also on our website, albumnerds.com.
You fight great, but I'm a great fighter. Huh? You ready?
Well, it's once again time on the program when I'm reminded of the words of the great Gene Simmons.
What's he, the fire god? What's his, the devil? No.
He's the demon.
The demon, yes.
Wow. Did your research, huh? This is what Gene had to say. I admire bands like Radiohead, but the idea of being that serious? Fuck that. Get up on stage and blow shit up. Mm-hmm. With that in mind, let's bring out the wheel of Albumgeddon and see what types of albums will be featured in our next Record Rumble.
When country royalty steps up, expect powerhouse vocals and chart-topping hits. Next time on Record Rumbles, it's the queens of the country music scene, a head-to-head showdown between iconic albums that showcase the strength, soul, and sass of country's leading ladies.
Yeah, it's about time we got some ladies into the ring and see what kind of damage we can do. Should be good. Looking forward to that one.
What records would you like to see in a Record Rumble? What else are you listening to? Email us at podcast@albumnerds.com or follow us on Instagram and other social media at Album Nerds. And make sure you vote on our next Record Rumble. And visit albumnerds.com to peruse the Hall of Fame and listen to all 291 episodes. And the best way to support the show is to share it. Please subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app.
Thank you so much for joining us once again on the Album Nerds Podcast. We'll catch you next time with those Queens of the Ring. Daddy like you. Wow, wow, wow. All right, we'll see you next time.